authors, writers, dreamers, all. Each day is an invitation to accept the call. I'm Brooke Warner from She Writes.
And I'm Grant Faulkner from NaNoWriMo. You're listening to Right Minded, weekly inspiration for writers.
Hello, writers, and welcome to another episode of Right Minded. And today we're going to be talking about this idea that everyone is a writer, writing is a birthright, which is something near and dear to both Grant and me, since it's one of the cornerstones of both of our writing communities at NaNoWriMo and She Writes. We're going to be talking to Mark Nepo, who is honestly one of the most inspiring authors I know.
You know, I agree, Brooke. I thought he was fascinating to listen to. I think his interview was a type of kind of spiritual poem, I think. And, you know, one of our mantras at NaNoWriMo is that everyone has a story to tell and everyone's story matters. And he puts such interesting language and life experience around that notion.
I know. I love to listen to him around that. And one of the best things about Mark is that he has published 20 books. He's a traditionally published author. And so often writing, especially publishing, obviously, becomes this elitist endeavor. And then it puts all these pressures on writers to achieve or to play to the trends, which we talk about a little bit with Mark. And you and I both come from this totally different vantage point. You know, we both have a goal of leveling the playing field. I know you've called NaNoWriMo a gate crashing organization, which I just love, and thought we might just share with people a second how we came to that. You know, why do we both feel so strongly that everyone's a writer and that we don't have to have this elitist idea around being a writer or a published writer for that matter?
Exactly. You know, I think writers tend to just kind of inherit a lot of baggage or put that baggage on themselves. And I remember when I first decided to become a writer, and one of my parents' friends took me aside and told me, and this is when I was like 22, and told me to study the New York Times bestsellers and to do exactly what they were doing. And while I think it's really important to study other books and best-selling books among them, I wasn't interested in becoming a writer to make a product. I would have gone into business if I wanted to do that. I was interested in writing for kind of more spiritual, you know, reasons of self-expression. But, you know, we face so much rejection, and being a writer is so much about solitude, that I think it's easy to chase that trend and to try to climb the ladder of status and instead of being in service to our stories.
Totally. But it's true what you say about baggage. Like in my TEDx talk, I ended with this idea of baggage. And when I was going through my early iterations of the TEDx talk, I actually went on a bit more to share a story that got cut from the final. But my own story was that my high school English teacher really decimated something that I felt so proud of, that was really near and dear to me, about something important to me, a statue actually that was in my family home that I have today in my own home that my great aunt had created. And I wrote a fictional piece about it. It was a Kuan Yin. And I put so much effort into it. I think it was incredibly authentic expression, an early piece. You know, I must have been 16 years old. And it came back. I really think I got a D, if I can remember correctly, and just read all over it. And when I said I was interested in writing, he just said something to the effect of, well, you're not going to be a writer. And I think that my experience is pretty common, you know, whether it's an English teacher or a parent who tells you that you shouldn't do it because you're not going to make a living. And so I just wanted to acknowledge and share my own story of the baggage and how much it can take to overcome it is quite a lot. Sometimes it can take years.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, one of the things about being a writer, you get more rejection than you get love. And it's really easy to rank yourself with other writers too. And so I think that whole kind of, I don't know what it is, the status hierarchy. Sometimes, for instance, when I've been weak, I've questioned, should I write something else that's more commercial, that's more popular? And the answer is always no, because those things, I can't fit myself into a different product. My product is my expression, and it's not a product. I don't view it like that. And so I think it's a constant battle, though. I have to constantly remind myself that I got into writing for the nourishment of telling a story and how that expands the universe for me.
I love that. And I also think this, to continue what I was saying, because I think there are some people who might have experiences very similar to mine, is you have to then reframe the conversation. You have to be able to get over those disappointments and rejections and to keep going. And I think in some ways, that's what makes the people who have gone through that kind of thing and then come out the other side all the more powerful. And, you know, you have to have the sense of yourself that you will persevere no matter what is a big deal. So I also appreciated what Mark was saying with regard to self-expression as being akin to breathing.
Yeah. You know,
it's just like inhaling and exhaling, and that all of us have this access to self-expression. And I hope that today's interview with him will be an invitation to our listeners.
Well, tell me about your green light moment this week. I'm really interested in hearing about it in light of this conversation.
Totally. It's about aligning with this NaNoWriMo message that everyone has a story to tell. If everyone is a writer, then it's worth reminding our listeners of how many artists over the years have said yes to themselves, you know, who have claimed that birthright and on their own terms. So I just want to do a momentary honoring of many of these writers, some of whom are household names, because I think it's important to see this legacy. So I thought I would just go through and say, you know, The Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield, The Martian by Andy Weir, The Joy of Cooking by Irma Rombauer. These are all people who were rejected and who did their books on their own terms. And then sometimes those books got picked up by traditional publishers and sometimes they didn't. And prior to those people, Margaret Atwood, Stephen King, Anais Nin, Beatrix Potter, Mark Twain, E.E. Cummings, Charles Dickens, the list goes on and on and on. And it's pretty incredible. And if you go online and just see, you know, who are these authors who, you can look it up by looking who's self-published. But the point that I'm making about the green light is not just about self-publishing, but also about, I have something I believe in and I'm going to do it no matter what. And that is the essence of green lighting and the moment that I share today to honor these people who have come before us. So how about your pep talk, Grant?
Yeah, you were saying the power of saying yes. I'm going to speak to the flip side of that, the negative power of saying no. When I talk to people about NaNoWriMo so often, not so often, but sometimes I'll hear from people and they'll say, I'm not a creative type. And I can't tell you how sad this makes me, that someone's going through the world and they're calling themselves that they're not creative, that they're not creators. And I think we're creative types. It's a definition of being human, essentially. So we're all creative types by definition. But I think when we're talking about baggage, I think a lot of people think that other people are the ones who get to write novels, like those people who live in Brooklyn or New York City, those people who go to MFA programs, those people who are born with connections. And so I think it's super easy to have imposter syndrome. And I think when I was mentioning that writers face more rejection than they face acceptance or love, I think that fuels imposter syndrome. So it's really easy to think that you're the one who can't do it or shouldn't do it. You're the one who can't crash those gates. It's the reason we have this podcast. We want everybody to embrace the fact that they are a creative type, to say yes to their creativity, and to write a story that is, I think, to Mark's words, that is a conversation with the universe, a conversation with themselves that adds to life's meaning and joy. And since you mentioned rejection, I want to say this one quote from Sylvia Plath. It's one of my favorites. She said, I love my rejection slips. They show me I try. And I think rejection, that's the growth mindset of rejection. That's turning it around. I say, when you get rejections, dig in, become more tenacious, become more relentless. Don't let that rejection defeat you.
Right. And this idea of reframing, you know, to think about rejection in a different way. So with that, I think we can get to Mark's interview, which is incredible. I'm excited for all of you to hear it. And we'll be back after a quick break. Today's guest is Mark Nepo, and Mark is a beloved poet, teacher, and storyteller. He's the author of 20 books, including the New York Times bestseller, The Book of Awakening. Mark has been called one of the finest spiritual guides of our time, and he's appeared several times with Oprah Winfrey on Super Soul Sunday. I've known Mark for a lot of years, so I'm very excited that he's joining us on today's podcast. And I also had the honor of seeing him on stage as part of Oprah's Life You Want tour back in 2014, which was a pretty fun experience to see you live in action. Mark, thank you for being with us.
Oh, sure. I'm glad to be here with you.
So I want to start with this thing that you wrote in your manuscript in progress that's going to be published next year called The Journey with No End. And you write that writing itself is a necessary conversation with the universe. This feels like a potentially important reframing of how many writers come to the page. I think of people oftentimes having goal-driven expectations about what their writing should be. So I was wondering if you could say more about writing for the sake of writing or writing for the sake of self-expression.
Sure. So I think, and let me go back to how that's all changed for me. You know, when I was in my 30s, as you know, in my writing, you know, I was stricken with cancer and went through almost died and still blessed to be here. But, you know, before that, I was en route to that. I was working very hard. I was teaching at Albany University, creative writing, among other things, and, you know, was very much looking and hoping to work hard enough to create literature, to add to the canon. And, you know, hoping I might write one or two great poems if I worked hard enough and long enough. And then all of a sudden, I was turned upside down and inside out, and forget writing great poems. I needed to discover true poems in order to live. And that whole experience and being still blessed to be here changed my whole understanding of expression, of the life of expression is a healing journey that's comparable to inhaling and exhaling. It's how the heart breathes. And regardless of what we produce, the process keeps us alive. And so now in my 60s, you know, I want to be the poem. And even if you don't write at all, I mean, the process of expression is essential. Like in meditating, we learn to meditate in order to be clear vessels, not great breathers. And with writing, I think we write to be clear vessels as well. And if we're true to that, chances are we will produce excellent work. But if I strive for excellent work, it may or may not be authentic or life-sustaining.
Very helpful articulation, because I think what you're speaking to is, in some ways, it reminds me of letting go of that pressure for it to need to be something.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have such a manufacturing imprint on our consciousness in the modern world that we look at everything, even with good intention, as a product. And this has affected how, you know, how I view even the notion of discipline now at this point in my life. Discipline, as we're taught young, is the ability to persevere and stick to it until you're finished with whatever you're creating or working on or repairing or building. Well, actually, it's now reversed for me. Discipline is that as soon as I move up into my head and I could be working, let's say, for 6 hours, and all of a sudden I realize my wife Susan's going to be home in an hour. As soon as I go up in my head and go, well, let's see, I might be able to get that chapter done or that poem done before she gets home. Discipline is dropping the pen right there because I've turned it into a product and I'm no longer in conversation or relationship because I've stopped entering time and I'm now moving through time again.
That's so interesting, Mark. I love the phrase manufacturing imprint and how easy or how we tend to operate within that framework. And I think of so many writers who I've talked with in the past, and they'll write to the market, for instance. Like I remember when vampire novels were super trendy and sold a lot, and I'd talk to people who were like suddenly writing vampire novels. And so I'm curious if you can, have you veered off in that direction during your writing life to write something that, you know, that wasn't in conversation with the universe, as you put it?
No, I haven't. You know, I have felt my entire life, and this is interesting because before my cancer journey, I was a driven young artist. And after my cancer journey, through no wisdom on my part, all of a sudden my drive was gone. And I was really confused. I was so grateful to be here, but it took me 6 to 8 months to figure out that now I was drawn to life-sustaining topics and conversations and participating in the life of expression. I was no longer driven. And it was like, you know, if a river is a fast moving river, it makes a lot of noise, but when it reaches the mouth or its delta and it starts to enter the sea, all of a sudden there's no noise. It's not that the current has disappeared. It's gone deeper and joined other water. And that's what happened. And for me, and once something has surfaced, I care very much about the reader. But before it has surfaced, as it's coming and I'm retrieving it, and I think writing is about listening and taking notes more than saying something, when I'm retrieving it, I'm not thinking of a reader at all. You know, that space is sacred space where I have, and all of us do, have conversation and relationship with the universe and with life itself, and we can't, I feel, I can't let anything in because my sensitivity will give sway to be influenced because I care about others. But once it's out, then it's like birthed, and now I care very much. Is it understandable? Is it clear? Is it accessible? And as you know, Brooke, because you've worked with me on some books, you know, and so I'm very interested in what have I missed? Where are my blind spots? How can I make this clear?
Right. That strikes me as a discipline all its own. This kind of shifting from writing for yourself to writing for others. I wanted to ask you a question about what I take to be your rather populist message, this notion that everyone is a writer, which interestingly is exactly NaNoWriMo's tagline. And that's Grant's organization, NaNoWriMo.
Yeah, everyone has a story to tell. Everyone's story matters.
Yes. And so what moves you to be so inclusive? And I'm just curious about this from the vantage point that I just know a lot of writers who operate from more of a scarcity mentality, you know, like, oh, someone's already written that book or said these things. It doesn't strike me that you ever operate in that way, but how can you be so inclusive? And what are, you know, where did you come up with this belief system that everybody has a story to tell or that everybody is a writer?
Well, the notion of poetry, let's say, is not about words on the page. Poetry is the unexpected utterance of the soul that comes to renew us. And therefore, poetry with a big P can take any genre form. It can even take dialogue form. It can take any form once that authentic expression surfaces. And therefore, everyone alive has that capacity of expression, just like everyone alive breathes. You know, and so a couple of things that come to mind is, you know, one is, and we don't have, again, in our modern world, we have this culture of expertise, you know, which really comes out. I mean, certainly we can learn things from people, and there are people who study certain fields of knowledge forever, and of course we can learn from each other. But under that, we're all the same 6 inches from heaven in the gutter, you know? And everybody has wisdom. As soon as they are seen and heard and their authenticity is affirmed, their wisdom comes out. You know, Native American elder circles, Native American elder councils, and they still meet like this. They have always met in circle. And it's not just for equity that there's no head to the circle. It's so that everyone on the circle has a direct view of the center. And I love that. Because that the assumption under that is we need everybody's view to grasp the center. We can't do it with just one view. So, you know, this whole the manufacturing imprint coupled with our need to feel special. The only reason you need to exclude someone is if you need to play seesaw and prop yourself up in comparison. And actually, everyone has their own genius. Because the word genius originally didn't mean an extraordinary skill or gift. It meant attendant spirit. And so everyone has a genius, which is where the word genie came from.
Fascinating. You know, Mark, one of the ways that we try to help people become, you know, we do believe that everyone has a story to tell and that everyone's story matters. And we have this framework where people write 50,000 words in 30 days and we tell them to banish their inner editor. And I think part of that inner editor are some of these things you're talking about, like that culture of expertise, that manufacturing imprint. You know, it can take 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 different forms. I think most writers have something that they need to banish to open themselves up to get their words on the page. And so I'm curious, because you are so wise, and this whole interview is sort of a poem, I have to say.
Thank you.
There's so many phrases I've been writing down. But do you ever experience resistance when it comes to your own self-expression or writing?
Well, no. And let me explain why. Because, you know, when I was young, of course, this goes along with what we've been talking about, another third arm of this, if you will. And that is that, you know, we're taught when we're young, and I was in my 20s and I was in graduate school, I was looking for material. But again, almost dying and being here gave me fresh eyes and a fresh heart and fresh ears. And then I realized that the miracle's everywhere. Everything is worth writing about. And so I don't need to look for material. I need to be clear enough and centered enough to hear the constant song that's always singing in life. So writer's block for me is not a block at all. It's when I'm either saturated or exhausted and I need to stop, put down, and take in anything new, anything different. Listen to the stories of others, you know, care for my dog. Make coffee for my wife, anything. And in order to renew and re-clean the lens and my ears, because, you know, just as a radio station never stops sending signals, but I might have static when I try to tune my radio. Well, that's like my mind and even my heart. So it's self-centered to think, oh, the material's gone away, rather than, oh, I'm full of static. The other thing I would say I want to just add from our previous question is in the notion of being original, this is where, you know, Ezra Pound at the turn of the last century in the 1900s said, make it new. And he, you know, cursed a whole generation of people trying to make sure that they didn't do anything that was ever done before. And actually, the word original goes back to the word origins. It's of the origins, and the origins are eternal and common. What makes it authentic is that no one has ever expressed it that's you or me or Brooke. You know, Shakespeare is the greatest example of this. Shakespeare never wrote anything that was new, quote. Every play he did, he took from Roman folk tales and Scottish histories. You know, the tale on Hamlet was called Amlet without the H. It was a Roman folk tale that was told for hundreds of times. What made it so amazing was the lens and the psychological lens that Shakespeare brought to it, which no one had ever done.
That's a great segue to my next question for you, Mark, because you're such a prolific writer. You're about to publish your 20th book here. You have your 21st already in the hopper. And what you're talking about with regard to originality strikes me as something that plagues writers who feel that they're inadequate or boring. What advice do you have for writers who feel that way?
Oh, you know, when I was young and feeling that way, I had a dream. I was seeking advice from the great Chinese poet Tu Fu. And in the dream, somebody told me he was up a mountain. So I was running up a mountain to see him and ask him about fame and greatness and all those other things. And I met him halfway. And then I was like, you know, nervous to ask him anything. But he read my mind. And he was in a hurry to get back down to the bottom of the mountain to find his family. And he just put his hand on my shoulder and he said, forget those questions. He said, if you can't find what you're looking for, see what's there. It's enough.
Thank you for sharing your dream with us. And Mark Nepo, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
You can find Mark online at marknepo.com and find him on Twitter at Mark Nepo. Today's writing action actually comes from Mark Nepo himself. Most of his books end with some kind of journaling prompt for the reader. Lots of his chapters sprinkle journaling prompts throughout, actually. So today's writing prompt is from Mark himself, and it goes like this. Write down your earliest experiences of being creative or expressive. Identify one of those experiences and let it unfold over a few pages of free writing. After you've done that, then ask yourself these questions. How did that creativity or expressiveness make you feel? What were some of the qualities of that early experience? We hope you'll take a minute to do this exercise and see what unfolds for you.
Thanks, Brooke. That reminds me of the famous Picasso quote that every child is born an artist. The challenge is how to remain an artist once we become adults. So I'm going to do this. And thanks to everyone for joining us for another episode of Right Minded. Please subscribe to Right Minded with your favorite podcast app, and we will see you next week.
See you next week, everyone.